Side 3, Lord Brocktree by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 86. Stonepaw mused over the situation before speaking.
If we're going to get out, we'd best make it soon. I'll guarantee that Ungat Trun is having the mountain searched stone by stone for me right now. If we linger down here, we'll have to face three things: discovery and a fight to the death, or capture and slavery. Our final option is that we remain hidden here and die of starvation. Not a pleasant thought, eh?
Blench dipped her ladle in the pool and drank.
So, Lord, let's get going right away. You know the way out?
Stonepaw shook his massive striped head.
I haven't got a single clue. Have any of you? Maybe an old ballad or poem might hold the answer. Let's put our thinking caps on. Hark! What was that? Listen.
Sound carried far in all directions beneath Salamandastron, and now faint echoes reached them. Voices.
It's like searching for a grain of salt on a seashore down here. Just think, we could all get lost ourselves,
one complained. There followed a screech of pain and the voice of Captain Swinch threatening the speaker.
Just think, eh? You ain't down here to think, rotface. You're down here to obey orders. Now get searching, or next time I won't be using only the flat of me blade on you.
We need more torches, Swinch. Send some beast back for them. Ha! Couldn't your magic us some grottle? You're supposed to be Ungat Trun's magician. I think it'll be a great piece of magic if and we finds anything but rock down here.
Oh, do you indeed? Well, let me tell you, Swinch, if we return empty-pawed, we could end up paying for it with our lives. You know how his mightiness must be obeyed.
Aye, you're right there, Fox. Hoy, Rotface, you and Grenick go back and get more torches, and fetch some victuals back with you, too. We might be some time getting the job done.
Well, don't stand there gawping. Get going.
The voices faded as the search direction changed, and soon there was silence again.
Ooh, that was close. Where do you reckon they were, Watt?
Stonepaw gestured for Troby to lower his voice.
These caves do strange things to sound. They could have been anywhere. One thing you can count on, though. They'll be back. The Wildcat won't give up until he's found me.
Old Bramwell's stomach gurgled. He rubbed it hungrily.
I could eat a mushroom and cheese pasty right now. One with a soft-baked crust. Maybe a salad, too.
Blench patted the old one's paw.
If and I was in me kitchens, I'd bake you one. Aye, and a deep apple pudding with lots of fresh meadow cream on it.
Stiffener Medic licked his lips.
You could throw in a cob of cheese, too, Marm. The yellow one with sage and onion herbs in it. My favorite.
Then he wilted under Lord Stonepaw's stare.
Thinking of victuals when we should be racking our brains for a way out? My fault, sir. Sorry, sir.
The Badger Lord softened to his faithful creatures.
I'm hungry, too, but 'tis easier for a badger to forget food than 'tis for a hare. Never mind, friends. Let's get back to figuring our way out.
Hours passed, interspersed by the dropping of water and the odd sigh from a hare who could see no answer to the problem. Lord Stonepaw kept his silence, knowing there was no solution available. They were imprisoned inside their own mountain, and likely to perish miserably down in its cellars. 11.
Food. Dottie vowed to herself that she could not touch another morsel that night.
Then she relented and set about nibbling candied lilac buds from the edges of an almond cake. Rog Longladle was surely a master of victuals, unequaled at baking, boiling, grilling, or cooking any edible his moles could find. The hairmaid watched Lord Brocktree digging into a huge bowl with a wooden ladle, his cheeks bulging as he ate.
"Well, pick 'em ears, sir. You look pleased enough with that."
The badger grinned wolfishly over another ladleful.
"Scrumptious, miss. The moles call it deeper and ever turnip and tater and beetroot pie. I could eat it all night."
Ruff took his nose out of a foaming tankard still half-filled with chestnut and buttercup beer, and chortled as he blew froth from his upper lip.
Har-har! Ain't it true, though? I'd have never left home if and I'd got victuals of this quality. Rog, you old oven dog, give us another of your kitchen ditties.
Brandishing his oversized ladle and smiling from ear to ear, the good mole beckoned the little dibbins to take their dancing places. Brisk as bumblebees and plump as robins, the tiny mole babes formed two facing lines. Dottie marveled at the fact that they could eat so much and still be eager to dance. The infant mole maids grabbed their pinafores and curtsied comically as their partners licked paws and dabbed them on their snouts in reply. Rog's wife scraped out the opening bars on an old fiddle, and all the watchers started tapping their paws in time. Rog's rotund body bobbed up and down with the rhythm until he found the appropriate moment to join in with his tuneful bass voice.
Oh, berries and pickles and cordial what tickles, good apples and pears from ye orchard do come, girt taters and beets and ye red currink sweet, giddy out of thy tunnel and go fetch oi some. Rattle-dee-toodle-dee, spring be a-born, ye fields be all full of ripe barley and corn. Ho, turnips and dandelion, damsing and plum, yon loaf's in ye oven, and crispin' oot noice. Carrots and onions and chestnutters come, get out in ye tunnel, oi won't tell ye twice. Golly be gully be wood for ye fire, oi loves ye, moi dearie, moi old art's desire. Oh, radish and celery, custard and cake, and ye sweetest of honey from Bumblebee be. There's beer in ye cellar, come now, my old feller. Yum fill up in thy tummy with what pleasures ye. Trickle be, ruckle be, lark soup above, come dance ye, my petal, and old my paw love.
Amid the applause, Rog skipped swiftly to one side, giving way to the little ones, who danced furiously, twirling and whirling, smocks, tunics, and aprons billowing. It was the funniest sight, all those tiny dibbins, bowing, leaping, touching noses, kicking up their paws, whooping in their gruff, small voices. Rog sat down next to Dottie, rattling his digging claws on the tabletop, as he watched the antics of the mole babes.
Them lively little dancers, sure enough, miz.
Oh, aye, Zer Rog. Them'll sleep like hogs in ye beds after all ye whirligiggin'.
The mole clasped Dottie's paw, immensely pleased that she spoke his own odd dialect.
You'm a good her beast, Miss Dot.
In truth, the dibbins did sleep well, though they snored uproariously, which moles consider a virtue among their babes, reckoning that snoring improves the gruffness and depth of voice. Dottie found herself a nice moss-strewn arbor close to the ledge where Ruff and Brocktree chose to lay their heads for the night. It must have been some time before the dawn hours when the entire mole household was roused by Brocktree. It was a nightmare, but clear as day. A swaying room, decked with cobwebs and spiders, and flies buzzing everywhere. Tossing and turning in his sleep, the Badger Lord tried to rid his mind of the unbidden vision. Then, suddenly, a great evil-looking wildcat appeared, its voice grating through him like a rusty blade.
Come, show your face to me. Come to my mountain, and meet with your fate. I am Unget Trun, the fearsome beast. You will die by my paw the day you look upon my face.
Still in the grip of nightmare, the Badger Lord sprang up. Seizing his battle blade, he roared out in a thunderous voice,
It is my mountain! I am the Lord Brocktree of Brockhall. My sword will look into your mind and touch your heart on the day we meet, Unget Trun. Yule-lea!
Dottie and Ruff leapt up in shock. The hair maid was knocked to one side as her otter friend hurled himself at her, shoving her out of danger in the nick of time. Brocktree's great battle blade whooshed past them, a hair's breadth away, cleaving a rock ledge in two and plowing a furrow in the floor like a small trench.
Back, mates! Get back, all of ye!
The otter was up and waving paws and rudder at moles scurrying about in their nightshirts, wanting to see what all the disturbance was about. Rog Longladdle acted swiftly. Taking a jug of cold mint tea from the banqueting table nearby, he sloshed it accurately in Brocktree's face. The badger lord staggered back and slumped on the ledge. Freeing a paw from his sword handle, he wiped the liquid from his eyes. Then he looked at the creatures all about him in bewilderment. The room. It was moving from side to side. Spiders, webs, flies, everywhere. Without warning, the double-hilted sword was in his paws again. He swung it up in a fighting stance, glaring at every beast with dangerous eyes. Where's the wildcat? Did any of you see him? Tell me! With great courage, Ruff stepped forward, placing himself in the path of the monstrous blade. Put up your weapon, mate. It was only a dream. With a dazed look, Brocktree lowered the sword and sat down. I don't understand it, Ruff. He was here. His name is Ungat Trun, and he wanted to do battle with me. Rog dispersed the moles with a wave of his long ladle.
Go on now, back a bed, all of ye. Leave us uns be.
Rog listened as Dottie told him of their quest for Salamandastron and Brocktree's reasons for needing to be there. When the badger lord recounted the scenes of his nightmare, Rog had something to say.
Waities, Bide yer ye instant.
He trundled off, returning shortly with another mole, a full-grown male, very sturdy, with a look of Rog about him.
This and yer be my son Girth. He'm a foine biggin, bainty. Us calls him Girt Girth. He'm a born wanderer and fond of travelern. Tell him what he seed, Girth.
Rog's son touched his snout politely to the guests.
Pleasure to meet ye, sirs, miss. Now, about 3 moons back I were roamin' south and west of yer. I waked up one morn and seed ye Girt Harmy of Vermints, all a-painted blue, trampin' westward to ye sand shores. Them was a-chantin' like this. Ye chief Vermint, ye shouts, Ungat, and t'others shout back 3 times, Trun, Trun, Trun. I watched till him varnished any distance, trampin' and a-shoutin' all he way. Ungat, Trun, Trun, Trun. Just like that, sir. Bower, says I to myself, there be a thing to tell ye mole folk back home. But my old dad, he says to keep soilin' about it. So I did till now.
In the light of Girth's tale, it took a lot of persuading to stop Brocktree following the vermin instantly. In the end, he agreed to wait until dawn. They would set off immediately after breakfast. Daylight had barely cracked when Lord Brocktree levered himself away from one of Rog's epic spreads and shouldered his sword. Come on, you two, or are you going to sit there feeding your famine-stricken faces all day? Dottie wiped her lips ruefully on an embroidered napkin.
I bally well wish we could. I've never tasted honeyed oatmeal like that in my life. I say, Rog, how the dickens do you make it taste so jolly good, what?
Rog chuckled at Dottie's momentary lapse from mole speech.
Young miss, I chops in lots of chestnutters and hazelnutters, too, covery lot with sprinkles of candied apple and pear flakers, and bakes it slow in the oven.
Ruff twitched his rudder in admiration of Rog's skill.
Ha-har! I can't tell one nutter from another, but old Rog there makes it sound wonderful.
The friendly mole dumped 4 packs on the table.
There be vittles for re-journey, good beasts.
Brocktree had noted the number of packs. There's 4 lots here, and we're only 3. Rog twiddled his digging claws, as moles do when they are confronted with a tricky situation.
Would he grant oi a boon, sir?
Dottie translated.
He wants a favor from you, sir.
Rocktree spread his paws magnanimously. I would be churlish if I refused, after such hospitality. Ask away, Rog, my friend. The mole hemmed and hawed a bit before coming out with it.
Could he taken my son Girth along with thee? I'd be allus obliged. He'm good company, deadly with thee slinger, and stronger than any mole alive. I be girtly worried when he goes off a-roamin' alone, sir. But my heart'd be easier if in my Girth were with gentle beasts like you'uns.
Lord Brocktree shook Rog's paw warmly. Girth will be a welcome addition to our little band, and if his cooking is anything like yours, I beg you to let him come along with us. Girth appeared out of nowhere and swept up his ration pack.
I been teached a cooking trick or two by my old dad, sir. Thank ye kindly for letting I join ye.
At the river bend, the four friends boarded their log and paddled off along the sun-flecked stream, with Rog and his family calling farewells.
Goombye! 'Twere a pleasure having ye to visit.
Miss Dot, goombye. Pity ye were too full to sing for us since last night. Maybe next time.
They don't know how lucky they were not to hear our Dotty warbling,
Ruff muttered under his breath to Brocktree. Girth was receiving instructions from his kin, to all of whom he replied with the same phrase,
Thank ye, I'll remember that. You'm keep a clean handkerchief with ye always, Girth. Mind ye manners, and don't scoff ye too much. Pay attention to what Girt Badger Lord tells ye, Girth.
Bring in a pressink back for ye old mum.
Be guarding ye young hermaid well now, son.
Girth's gruff bass voice echoed back along the stream.
Thank ye. I'll remember that.
The moles stood in the shallows, waving until the log was out of sight. Girth's mother wiped a kerchief about her eyes.
Brr-hoo, I do hopes ye'll be safe.
Rog placed a paw about her shoulders.
He certainly will, Marm. He be a rock of sense, that'n.
12. Udara Groundslay was a short-eared owl. Unfortunately, he had been born without the gift of flight, but this did not seem to worry him one little bit. He had made his birthplace, the Rockwood, and its surrounding moors, his domain. Nothing moved or went on there that he did not know about. Udara was immensely wise and very fierce. He protected his territory jealously, and made his own rules for any creature venturing within its boundaries. These rules he enforced by his own natural ferocity. Fleet Scott sat with the squirrels around a small fire. It was almost twilight when the owl arrived. Juka rose to greet him.
Thou art looking hale and fine of feather, Groundslay.
Ruffling his brown and umber barred feathers, the big owl stared solemnly at the squirrels with huge golden eyes which shone in the reflected firelight.
Rook-a-doo! What brings bush tails to my lands?
Fleet Scott had never heard a creature speaking so slowly and deliberately. Moreover, the murderous curved beak of Udara scarcely moved when he spoke. Juka politely let a moment elapse before replying.
We have brought a long-ears with us. He seeks news of his kind, or any other beast seen hereabouts.
The owl closed both eyes and twitched his ear feathers gently. Fleetscut thought he had gone to sleep, but then the big golden orbs opened again.
Uruku!
Udara sees all, even in the moon dark. Long ears have passed through here. Young ones, noisy and frivolous creatures. Spike dogs also. I like not the spike dogs. They are rough, ill-mannered beasts.
Fleetscut stood up from the fire.
How many long ears went through here, and when?
Udara's body did not move, but his head turned as if it were a separate part of him in a great half-circle. He regarded the old hare like a piece of mud stuck to his talon, his eyes anything but friendly.
Uruku!
You have lessons in courtesy to learn, Long Ears. Speak only when you are spoken to. Your seasons have not made you any more sensible than the young ones of your kind.
The head turned in leisurely fashion until Udara was facing Juka once more.
Nothing in this life is free, believe my words. If the old Long Ears wants information, he must pay me.
Juka shot an inquiring glance at Fleet Scott, who nodded his head vigorously. The squirrel spoke for him.
The Long Ears wants to know what you require as payment.
Ooh!
Udara let out the long, slow noise as if he were considering.
The sweet, heavy bread you carry. Udara likes that. It is good.
Fleet Scott tossed his ration pack to Juka, who placed it on the ground, close to the owl's talons. Udara Groundslay looked down at it. His eyes closed, then reopened.
Ook-ook-ook!
More. I want more than just one.
The old hare stared around the fire at the other squirrels. None seemed ready to give up their rations. Fleet Scott shrugged and held his paws wide. Juka stared at him impassively.
Udara says one is not enough. Thou wilt have to find more.
Ruro tossed her ration alongside that of Fleet Scott. Silence seemed to stretch out into the growing darkness before Udara deigned to reply to the offer.
Rukudu!
One more.
You hear him, Long Ears. Hast thou any more?
Fleet Scott shook his head. Udara kicked the packs lightly.
Hutu!
And you wasted your time coming here, Long Ears.
Fleet Scott had put up with enough.
Just a tick there, Featherbag. I think you're the one needs a lesson in courtesy. It's no blinkin' wonder that other creatures avoid coming here, what? You bad-mannered old swindler? I wouldn't give you the dust off me paws after the way you've treated me.
A gasp arose from the squirrels. Udara stalked slowly around the fire until his beak was level with the hare's eye.
Kuroom!
Two it is, then, Long Ears. You are a perilous beast. I have slain many for less than what you said to me. But mind, two only buys the information that two merits. Thud.
Juka's pack landed with the other two.
There, now thou hast three. Give the Long Ears all your information, Udara. All.
Hooking the three packs with his talons, the owl slung them up over his useless wings, calling as he stalked off.
Be here at dawn light. I'll tell you all then.
Coo, mm-hmm.
When Udara had gone, Fleet Scott slumped down angrily by the fire.
Great feathered buffoon, what?
Juka squatted in front of him, shaking her head knowingly.
Tis ye who art the buffoon, hare. Hadst thou not given up thy pack so quick, I could have bargained and got thine information for one pack. And thee, Ruro, what were ye thinking of, adding thy pack to his so quickly?
I only gave up my ration to Udara when the situation became hopeless. Udara was insulted by thee, Long Ears. Hadst thou walked away with the pack, he'd have hunted and killed thee. That bird is not named Udara Groundslay for nothing. Now put a latch on thy tongue and get some sleep.
Feeling rather foolish and properly chastened, Fleet Scott lay down. However, before he closed his eyes, the old hare patted Ruro's shoulder.
You're a jolly good pal, Ruro. I won't forget the way you offered up your pack to get my information. Thanks.
Ruro lay staring into the fire as she replied.
Juka Sling was right. We be naught but two fools. Aye, and we'll find that out soon enough, methinks, when we have to march on empty bellies. Good night to thee.
Udara returned in the dawn hour, when most of the squirrels were still sleeping, thanks to the previous day's marching. Juka and Fleet Scott hastily got a fire going and made mint and dandelion tea, sweetening it with lots of honey to suit the owl's taste. Sunlight was beginning to flood gold into the aquamarine skies of the eastern horizon before Udara deemed it fit to begin his narrative, which he did with much deliberation.
Hum, rum, rum. There is a certain Longears, a hare, not of the mountain from which you come. They say he is a march hare, wild and perilous. I have not met him. I do not know. Many Longears are gathering to him at a secret place. I have heard them whisper his name, King Bucko Big Bones.
Pleatscut could not help cutting in.
King?
Udara's huge golden eyes blinked reprovingly.
I did not ask you to interrupt me. If you want to talk, then carry on, and I will hold my silence, Longears.
Juka apologized for Pleatscut hastily.
Forgive him. It is the manner of Longears to be excited. I will vouch for his silence. Please, the floor is thine.
She shot a warning glance at the old hare. Udara continued.
Hoo-hum! One of the Longears dropped a piece of bark scroll. Reading is not part of my wisdom and of no interest to me. That is all I have to say. You will be gone from my land before noontide. Here is the writing. You may keep it.
Lifting his left wing slightly, with great effort, Udara allowed a small folded scroll to drop near the fire. Pleatscut pounced upon it before it rolled into the flames. Without a backward glance, Udara Groundslay, the flightless owl, ambled off to pursue his solitary existence.
Read thee aloud. I wouldst hear this long-ear message.
Juka's arrogant words got the better of Fleetscott's temper.
Not just a bloomin' moment, Bushtail. Ha! I see you don't like me calling you that, do you? Well, I'm sick and fed up of being called Longear, see? I'll call you Juka, you call me Fleetscott. I'll call your blinkin' lot squirrels, and you call my flippin' lot hares. What?
Juka feigned an air of indifference.
As thou pleasest.
You can bet your jolly life I pleasest.
Then calm thee down and read, Long... Pleatscut.
Juka's tribe were awake by this time. They gathered around to hear what was on the scroll as the old hare read aloud.
2 points north of dawn, find stone and shade and drink. Follow where no water runs. March on through 2 moons and suns. My sign you'll see, I think. Discover then a stream wolf's ford. Tug thrice upon the royal cord. Then my honor guard will bring loyal subjects to their king.
Fleetscut's paw thwacked against the parchment.
Tchah! The very idea of it! A hare promoting himself to king, the pollywoggle, and doubtless luring our young salamandestron warriors to his side. Who does he think he is, what?
Juka could not help smiling at Fleetscut's indignation.
For sure, he thinks he's king. Canst thou solve any of this riddle poem, hare?
Pleatscut snorted.
Of course I canst, squirrel. Us chaps from Salamandestron eat lots of salad. Good for the old brain, don't you know? We try not to scoff large amounts of nuts. Makes the tail bushy, and next thing you know, you want to go climbing trees.
He paused to note the look on Juka's face, then continued.
Ahem! Now, let me see. Ah, yes. The place where stone and shade and drink can be found is right here. The directions are clear enough, but 2 points north of dawn, That's a bit of a poser, ain't it?
Ruro provided the answer.
Dawn is in the east, where the sun rises. 2 points north of that is northeast. We must go northeast, methinks.
Fleetscut sniffed.
I knew that. Just testing you chaps. But what about a spot of breckers first? I've only had a drop of tea so far today. Chap can't go far on that, what?
Ruro thrust 2 hard green apples at him.
Remember, friend, thou hast no rations, nor have I or Juka. Come now, we'll travel o'er the top of this rock wood, and mayhap we'll find our way with a view from there.
A wearying and difficult climb brought them to Rockwood's Peak by mid-morning. As they sat down in the tree shade, breathing hard, a solemn call hailed them from one of Udara's hiding places.
Coo-woo-hoo.
You are still on my land, and the morn is half gone. Beware if you are still here at noon.
Fleet Scott was trying to climb an old, gnarled rowan to scout out the countryside. When the owl called, he slipped and barked his shin. Biting his lip, he shouted back,
Yah! Go and boil your beak, mattress bottom!
Rurro helped him down to earth before bounding easily up into the branches, saying to the old hare, who was wincing and rubbing his shin,
Bide there, friend. After all, I've scoffed large amounts of nuts.
She was back down to report, almost as swiftly as she had gone up, pointing northeast.
A dried-up stream bed that way, going off into the distance.
Fleet Scott was up and about, feeling much better.
Struth, just like the poem said, follow where no water runs. Solved that pretty smart. What, Juka?
Juka led off the march, informing the old hare.
I had already figured that much, O thou who art fleet of Scott.
Rurro took up the rear, with her friend muttering by her side.
Huh! Fleet of Scott, indeed! Can't even pronounce a bally chap's name right! How'd she like it if I called her Sling the Juka? I say, that's a good idea. Why don't we sling her?
It is never a good thing to be hungry, and Fleet Scott felt the pangs on that day's march. Single file they went, through a twisting, turning, long, dried-out stream bed, with the hare plodding along in the rear, coughing and sniffling from the dust of others tramping ahead. He had neither food nor drink, having bolted the two little sour apples the moment Rurro gave them to him earlier on. First, he tried sucking on a pebble to allay his thirst, but when moisture came to his mouth, it formed a nasty paste with the dust he was inhaling. Next, he began grabbing at pawfuls of grass as he passed, but when he chomped on the first clump, he gave a muffled yelp and spat it out, glaring at the yellow and black banded body humming angrily amid the dust.
Confounded bloomin' wasp, lounging about in the middle of a chap's tuck. Oh, it ain't fair. I'm starving.
Rurro turned and tugged his paw to make him keep up.
Carry on trying to feed thyself, and thou wilt be left behind. No time for stopping when we're on the march.
Late that evening, Juka called a halt. Fleet Scott flopped exhausted alongside Rurro in the dry watercourse, gazing longingly at the other squirrels. Opening their packs, they sipped from little flasks and ate sparingly of the honey-soaked, fruit-filled farls. With a face the picture of misery and despair, he begged them,
I say, chaps, how about sharing supper with a pal, what?
Ignoring Fleet Scott, they carried on eating and drinking. The old hare tried a different approach.
Aha! This is the life, mates. Comrades together, what? Marching, sleeping, singing, firm friends on life's jolly old highway, what? I say there, old pal, old chum, throw your messmate a cob of that stuff over, and a drop to drink, you good old tree walloper.
The squirrel in question stowed his food away carefully, glaring hatred at Fleet Scott.
Give thy foolish gob a rest, long ears. 'Twert for thee we'd be snug in our pine grove, instead of tramping about on some wild goose chase because of thy bad-mouthing our leader. What a gag on thy tongue. Aye, and eat that.
Fleet Scott slumped back and sulked a bit, watching an ant crawl over his footpaw. He was about to reach for it and try his first taste of insect when a fresh idea struck him. Scooting over on his tail, he got closer to Juka. She wondered what he was about until he winked, smiled at her, and whispered,
Bet you're rather peckish, too, old gal, what? Rotten bunch of cads this lot, aren't they? Look at that bounder over yonder, stuffing his face like a frog at a fry-up. Listen, you're the leader, ain't you? I've got a rippin' idea. Now, how does this sound to you? Suppose you issue a stern order for one or two of them to give you half their rations. I mean, they daren't refuse Juka to sling the old boss tail-kicker, could they? And we just divvy the grub between us, half for my clever wheeze, half for your position as chief. Hee-hee-hee! Spiff and scheme, ain't it, what?
The look Juka gave him would have split a solid rock. Fleet Scott scooted hastily back, resigned to a night of hunger and thirst. He lay down, closed his eyes, and shouted,
"Good night, you grub-grabbing, foul-perishing mob of skinflints! Hope the noise me tummy's making keeps you awake all bloomin' night! Hope you dream of me starving to death of hunger, tail-twitching, nut-eating bark-wallopers!"
Morning brought Fleet's Cut no relief. As soon as he opened his eyes, he was complaining.
"Yah! Oh, the famine cramps! Me paws have gone dead! I can't see! It's the scoffless lurgy! I've been struck down with the withering ear fever! Food! Some beast save me!"
Whump! Juka landed slam in his middle, bringing him down flat and stifling his mouth with both paws as she hissed angrily.
"Fool! Shoutin' and wailin' across the country! Didn't thou hear Bedell calling for all to keep low, there be vermin abroad? Lie still and silent, or I'll slay thee myself!"
She peeped over the top of the dried stream bank. Ruro and Grood scuttled up to join her.
"Something be moving over there, Ruro, see?"
"Aye, I see it well enough. The grass is long out there, and 'tis moving the opposite way to the breeze.
I wonder how many of them there be."
Young Grood was about to make an estimate when Juka cuffed his ear lightly.
"Curb thy language, Grood. Stay low, every beast, and mayhap they'll pass us by. No sense inviting trouble."
Rubbing his stomach, Fleetscut popped his head up, took a quick glance of the waving grass, and called out,
"What ho there! Show yourselves! We're friends!"
Immediately, the spiked heads of two hedgehogs rose above the grass as they strode toward the stream bed. Juka fixed the old hare with her gimlet eye.
"How didst thou know they were hedgehogs?"
Fleetscut waggled his ears in cavalier fashion.
"I'm a salamandastron hare, you see. We can scent vermin a day away, or at least we used to in the old days. Well now, you chaps, whom have we the honor of addressing, what?"
The two burly male beasts rolled awkwardly into the ditch.
"Good day to yer. I'm Grassum, and this here's my brother Reedum. You ain't by any chance spotted an Og babe wandering loose in these parts, have yer?"
The hare shook their paws, carefully avoiding the spikes.
"Can't say we have, really. Give us a description, and we'll keep a weather eye out for the little tyke."
Grassum did all the talking, his brother merely nodding and saying, "Aye," to emphasize the case.
"Skittles be his given name. We took him off in some foxes last season. Doesn't know who his mum and dad are, or where they be. Ain't that right, Reedum?"
"Aye."
"A right little pawful he is, if'n you ask me. Talks very educated, very impertinent, very cheeky. An old head on young shoulders. That's what he is, right, Reedum?"
"Aye."
"Calls us his two wicked uncles, just 'cause we makes him go to bed early and wash regular. Eh, Reedum?"
"Aye."
"Anyhow, Skittles done a bunk on us and got himself lost. We've been a-searching for him 2 days now, me and Reedum."
"Aye."
"Anyhow, if a new good beast finds him and we ain't about, you'd best leave him with the first edge-og family or tribe you come across. That's best, ain't it, Reedum?"
"Aye."
Laboriously, they began climbing out of the stream bed. Fleetscut called hopefully after them.
"I say! You chaps haven't got the odd morsel of grub about you. A leftover apple pie or some unwanted salad, what?"
Grassum looked down on him from the bank top.
"We ain't got a crust to spare atween us, have we, Reedum?"
"Nay."
The old hare smiled ruefully.
"Good day, sirs. Thanks for the information, Grassum. Oh, and thanks for your scintillating conversation, Reedum. I actually got quite excited when you switched from I to nay. Dash clever trick, that, what?"
Juka cast a jaundiced eye over Fleetscut as he marched off.
"I wish thou wert as talkative as yon Reedum."
Hot, dusty, and tiring, the day passed uneventfully, wearying on both paws and spirits of the trekkers. Fleetscut became convinced his end was near from starvation. Juka and Ruro bore their hunger steadfastly, neither asking nor taking sustenance from the sparse rations of their tribal comrades. At evening, The dried stream bed petered out, and they made camp for the night on the open moor, squatting around a fire they had kindled in the lee of a boulder. Fleet Scut's moods had ranged from outrage and name-calling to silent high dudgeon, and finally a fatalistic resignation. He lay apart from the others, quiet for a while, then began to moan his thoughts aloud.
"Oh, dearie, dearie me! 'Tis a hard life, and a jolly old sad death, what, perishin' out here on the grassy plains without any beast to mourn over me benighted bones. Hunger, thirst, the scoffless lurgy, witherin' ear fever, and the dreaded numb dead paw. That's besides tummy shrink ague, and fearsome red scut rot. Oh, yes, mates, you name it, and old Fleet Scut suffered it. A walkin' bone bag, courageous to the last, too proud to beg a crust from me messmates. Fadin' away, sad and slow. Wonder if they'll strike a medal for me, what? A skinny hair with a brave smile, that'd be about right. Oh, and in the background, lots of fat, wobbly squirrels grinning like stuffed toads. Hey, what's that?
A slingstone bounced off the ground close to his head. Juka was whirling her sling, carefully loaded with a rock, and she had a wild, determined glint in her eye.
"We've stood enough of thy ceaseless whimperin' and whinin', Long Ears. Speak one more word, and this rock will find thee."
Fleet Scut turned quickly over and shut his eyes tight.
"All right, yar, marm. Nighty-night now."
As a new day dawned, Fleet Scut, unable to sleep because of hunger pangs, leapt up roaring,
"Aha! I think I see his sign, chaps! There 'tis!"
13. Silence reigned in the hidden cavern beneath Salamandastron, broken only by the dripping of water and the snores of Lord Stonepaw and his hares. Not knowing the time of day or night, they had succumbed to their natural urge to sleep.
"Where in the name of Fang and Fur have they got to?"
Stiffener Medic came awake at the sound of voices outside the cave. It was the two blue horde rats, Rotface and Grinnick, returning with the food and drink they had been sent for. The boxing hare listened to their conversation. They were obviously lost.
"Huh, don't ask me. You'd think they'd have left us some sign for direction, or just sat and waited for us. Well, what do you say we just sit down and wait for 'em? Can't do that. They might be miles away. We could be down here forever. Aha! But they won't last long, will they? We've got the food. Hee hee hee! Do you fancy some of this plum pudding from the Lord Badger's kitchens, eh, Grinnick? You must be joking, Rotface. Cap'n Swint should have the hide off on our backs for stealing victuals."
The voices receded down the passage. Stiffener slipped through the rift and went after them, silent as a shadow. Before long, he could see the flicker of their torch up ahead. He followed, hoping they would soon stop to rest, but the rats wandered on willy-nilly from chamber to corridor and cavern to tunnel for what seemed an age. Finally, Stiffener's hopes were rewarded. Grinnick found a low rock shelf and plunked himself down on it.
"This is hopeless. We're lost, aye, and by the looks of it they are too. We've not had sound nor sight of 'em yet."
Rotface sat down next to his companion.
"You're right there, Grin. These flasks of ale are weighing me down. Me paws are killing me. What say we swap? You carry the drink a while, I'll carry the food, eh?"
Grinnick snorted.
"No chance, mate. You thought they'd be lighter. That's why you ran to pick 'em up."
"Over here, idiots! Over here!"
A voice was calling them. Both rats jumped up, scared of being caught sitting down. Rotface peered into the darkness behind them.
"Sounds like they're down there. What do you think, Grin? Sounds go different way down here. Maybe they're up yonder. What'll we do, then? Give me the torch. I'll go and look where you reckon they are. Stay here and wait for me." "Oh, no, Sly Boots. You're not leaving me alone with no light." "Well, you go. I'm not scared. I'll wait here. Go on."
Grinnick went cautiously, holding the torch high, calling out softly so it would not echo.
"Cap'n Swinch, Magician Grottle, is that you, sirs?"
a voice called from around a bend in the passage.
"What do you think it is, Addlebrain? We're here!"
Grenach hurried around the bend, his face illuminated by the torch.
"We've been looking all over for you."
His words were cut short by a swift, powerful right and a left uppercut which battered him flat with lightning speed. Stiffener even caught the torch before it fell. Rotface peered down the passage and saw the light of the torch wave from side to side.
"What is it, mate? Have you found him?"
A passable imitation of Grinnick's harsh voice answered,
"We're going! Hurry up!"
The rat scuttled down the passage, dragging the food and drink behind him, afraid of being lost and alone.
"Wait! Hang on! I'm coming!"
As he rounded the bend, Stiffener struck. Unfortunately, the boxing hare had not realized that Rotface's head was bowed as he struggled with the packs. Stiffener's blow hit the rat, but only grazed his skull. Rotface dropped the packs. He was a big, solid rat. Shaking his head, he went for his dagger.
"Ha! 'Tis only an old rabbit! Come on, Granddad, let's see the color of your insides!"
Stiffener Medic was not given to exchanging badinage with vermin. Coolly, he sprang forward, feinting with a left at the rat's stomach. Immediately, the rat stabbed downward with his blade. A swinging right hit him like a thunderbolt, breaking his jaw, and he collapsed with a sigh. Stiffener was off down the passage, the two packs in either paw, the torch clamped in his jaws. Lord Stonepaw and the others fell on the food with gusto, though the badger shook his head disapprovingly.
"You could have gotten yourself slain. Why didn't you wake me?"
Stiffener turned his attention from a fruit scone.
"You need your sleep, sir. So did those two vermin. Couldn't box for acorns, either of them."
Blench winked at him.
"That's old Stiffener for you. Lays him out stiff, he does. Here, my dearie, try some of my plum pudding."
The boxing hare accepted it, chuckling.
"Only did it 'cause I couldn't stand the thought of vermin getting used to your wonderful cooking, marm. Now, even those two grandsons of mine was with us, young Southpaw and his brother Bobweave, they'd have put those two rats down and gone looking for more. Pair of rascals. Talk about fight. Those two'd swim the great sea just to be in on a good scrap. Of course, I taught 'em, you know."
Ungat Trun had now taken up residence in the mountain. He liked the view from Lord Stonepaw's chamber. Sprawling on the bed, he sampled the badger's best mountain ale while chewing a savory cheese and onion flan from Blench's kitchen. A knock sounded on the door. At a nod from Ungat, the guard opened it. Grand Fregorl glided in, standing to one side as Grottle, Captain Swinch, Rotface, and Grinnack were ushered in by the stoat Captain Frawl. Putting aside food and drink, the wildcat rose from the bed. He circled the four culprits slowly, his banded tail swishing as he noted their trembling paws.
"I take it that the news is not good. Talk to me, Grottle."
Fighting to keep his voice calm and level, the stunted fox made his report.
"Mightiness, we have searched through endless dark caves beneath your mountain, with no taste of food nor drink passing our lips. It is cold down there, and totally dark. Alas, great one, we found no trace of the striped dog or his creatures, though it was not from lack of trying."
Ungat leapt onto the window ledge and stood there, framed by the sky outside.
"Who are these two horde rats? Why are they here?"
Captain Swinch rapped orders at Rotface and Grinnack.
"One pace forward, you two. Stand to attention. Eyes front. Tell His Mightiness what happened to you."
The rats' heads shook uncontrollably as they rattled forth their concocted story to their fearsome master. They did it piecemeal, alternating one to the other, Rotface nursing his broken jaw.
"We were sent back for victuals by Captain Swinch, sire." "Aye, and when we returned with him, the main search party wasn't there, mighty one, so we was sort of lost."
"But we never ate nor rested, sire. We searched for him. We searched and searched and searched, sire.
Anyhow, mightiness, there we was, a-searchin', when all of a sudden we was surrounded.
It was the striped dog, and more than a score of those rabbits. But well-armed they was, sire. We fought them like mad beasts. There was blood everywhere.
Mightiness, there was too many of them. They stole the victuals and left us for dead, sire.
Unget Trun was on the hapless pair like a hawk with two chickens. Rotface and Grinnack screeched as the wildcat's claws sank into their shoulders. He shook both of them, snapping their necks, and then with a mighty heave he hurled the two carcasses out of the wide window onto the rocks below. He was not breathing heavily, nor was there a trace of anger or bad temper on his face as he turned from the window ledge. He stared impassively at Groddle and Swinch as though nothing had happened.
Tomorrow, at first light, you will return to your task. The striped dog is alive and hiding down there with his hares. He will not escape me, because you will find him. Take as many to assist you as you wish. Take supplies, extra torches, anything. But remember this. Return empty-pawed, and you will wish you had died quickly, like those two fools who stood lying bare-faced in front of me. Fail me, and your deaths will take the best part of a season as an example to all. Do you understand what I have just said to you both?
Swinch and Groddle retreated, bowing.
As you command, Mightiness.
We will find the striped dog and his hares, great one.
Ungat waited until they had made it to the door.
Wait. Captain Frawl, have these two staked out on the shore below, where I may see them from this window. They are not to have food or water. Choose two strong soldiers to beat them with the flats of their own sword blades, and tell them to lay on hard. It will serve as a warning to my forces that no beast fails to carry out the orders of Ungat Trun, not even a captain or a magician. They may be released at dawn tomorrow to continue their search.
Rip Fang and Doomeye, the new recruits, were chosen to administer the punishment. They stood over their staked-out victims, holding the swords high, looking up to the window. Ungat signaled that the beatings should begin with a wave of his paw. Rip Fang smiled apologetically at the two quivering figures pinioned on the sand.
Orders is orders. No hard feelings, eh? Swish, thwack. Swish, thwack.
The sound of the flogging was soon drowned out by Swinch and Groddle's screams. Ungat Trun turned from the window and prowled down to the dining hall with his Grand Fregoral hurrying behind. 60 captive hares were herded into a corner, ringed by armed horde beasts. Captain Rogue, a tough female weasel, saluted the wildcat smartly.
"These 60 of the lesser orders await your judgment, sire."
As usual, the Grand Fregoral addressed her master's words to the prisoners in her toneless cadence.
"You long ears are of an inferior species, not fit to live in the shadow of the higher orders. It is only on the whim of my master that you still draw breath. Ungat Trun, he who makes the stars fall and the earth tremble. Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast who drinks wine from the skulls of his enemies, conqueror of the world. You live now only to serve him in slavery. If your work is not satisfactory, one of you will be hurled from the top of this mountain each day. You hold the lives of your own comrades forfeit."
Sailors could not restrain herself from crying out,
"I hope I live to see the day you're chucked from the mountain top, cat!"
A spear butt struck her in the face and she went down. The rat who had delivered the blow raised his weapon again, point down, to slay the old hare. Ungat stopped him.
"Halt! Leave that creature be."
Parting ranks, the guards allowed Ungat passage to Sailears. He stood over her, shaking his head.
"I wish my creatures had spirit like yours, hare. What is it that creates such bravery and loyalty to some old fool of a striped dog?"
Ignoring her swollen jaw, Sailears levered herself upright.
"You wouldn't jolly well know, cat! And you probably wouldn't understand if I tried to tell you, what?"
The wildcat stood, paws akimbo, smiling slightly.
"All I know about is conquest. I rule through fear, not affection.
I'll wager you know where the striped dog is hiding at the moment, eh?
Saliers maintained a defiant silence, exploring a loosened tooth with her tongue. The wildcat shook his head admiringly.
Aye, I can see you do. More than likely you'd rather die than tell me, and so would all your comrades. No matter, I'll find him. Just remember now that you are my slaves. You are all prisoners until you die.
Then Sail Ears did a strange thing. She placed one paw against her head, the other over her heart, and smiled.
If that's what you think, then you've lost, Cat. We all are free, here in our minds and here in our hearts.
Ungat turned on his paw and strode off, calling back,
Don't push your luck, or I'll show you how easy it is to break a creature's spirit.
He was answered by a concerted roar from the prisoners.
Eulalia!
Whispering something to Fregoral, the wildcat departed the dining hall without a backward glance. The Grand Fregoral held her paws up to gain the hare's attention.
His Mightiness has decreed that you starve, every one of you, the next 2 days for your insolence. Take them away and lock them up.
Before any of the horde could lay paws on the captives, Torleap, a fine, upright old hare, rapped out some orders.
Form 12 ranks, 5 deep, you lot. Look lively now. Dress off to your right. Tension! Straighten up in the back there, laddie buck. Show these vermin how it's done. Chin in, head back, shoulders straight, eyes forward, ears stiff. That's the stuff. Now, by the right, quick march. 1-2, 1-2. Right markers, keep those lines straight.
Off to their prison cave they marched, surrounded by Captain Rogue's bewildered vermin, who could not comprehend how a defeated band of ancient hares could sing in captivity, although sing they did, loud, long, and courageously.
I'm a hare of Salamandastron, and foes don't bother me. I'll fight all day and sing all night this song of liberty. Liberty, liberty, that's for me. The mountain hares are wild and free. 1, 2, 3, hooray! You can't stop sunrise every day. I'm a hare of Salamandastron. I wander near and far. You'll know me when you see me, 'cause I'll shout Eulalia. Liberty, liberty, that's for me. From good dry land to stormy sea. 1, 2, 3, hooray! You can't stop sunset every day.
Ungat Trun could hear it from where he stood at the mountain's main shore entrance. He looked at the black, charred doors, still solid upon their hinges, and out to the shoreline, crowded by his mighty hordes. To no beast in particular, he commented aloud,
Fools! Naught but old fools!
Striding down to the unconscious forms of Grottle and Swinch, he picked up a pail of seawater and hurled it on their backs. They were revived, moaning with pain. Ungat leaned down close, so he had their attention.
I want that striped dog found!
He was about to threaten further when a vision of the other badger flashed into his thoughts. Big, shadowy, and as forbidding as the war blade he carried across his back. Straightening up, the wildcat gazed out to sea. He could not explain it, but his confidence felt shaken. Moreover, he did not know whence the warrior badger would come, or the day he would arrive. The wildcat was certain of only one thing. The badger would come. 14. Sunshaded, green, and tranquil, the stream stretched, lazily meandering through the woodlands on this, the questers' first full day together. Dottie and Girth sat up forward, chattering away in mole speech. Ruff and Brocktree were aft, paddling. The otter nodded approvingly at their new crew member's velvety back.
"Looks like we found a treasure there, matey. That breakfast old Girth cooked up this morning would have made his dad proud of him. Bet you're glad we brought him along."
Brocktree could not help but agree with his companion.
"Aye, and he's not feared of boats or water, like most moles. He looks as strong as you or I, Ruff." "Do you think so? Well, we'll find out soon enough. Ahoy there, you two in the prow! Pick up your paddles and lend a paw here. Let's make a little speed, eh?
Girth was a bit inexperienced, but as soon as he got the knack of wielding a paddle, there was none better. Enjoying himself hugely, he commented,
Not miss. This be better in digging at tunnel holes. He can keep his paws nice and clean. I likes boating on his stream girtly. It be fine for a child such as I.
The hair maid found herself panting as she struggled to keep stroke with Girth. His strength and endurance seemed boundless. He was not even breathing heavily.
Whur, did he gettin' to be so strong, Sir Girth?
I expect it be all he vittles, I scoffed. Good grub and lots of sleepin', that be easy stuff. At least that's what my old mum allus says.
In the early noon, a water meadow appeared to the south. Dottie's keen ears soon picked up sounds from its far side. She called sternward to Brocktree.
I say, sir, some kind of jolly old hubbub going on over there. Shall we wander over and take a look, what?
The Badger Lord scanned the side stream, searching for an entrance, but it seemed to be blocked by dead wood cast there from the stream flow.
There's no way into the water meadow. Perhaps we should leave our log here and skirt the banks.
You'm set there, sir. I'll sort her out.
Girth grabbed a hefty beech limb with his big digging claws. With a mighty tug, he tore it free from the debris of driftwood, creating an entrance for them.
There you be. Now take her nice and easy, Miss Dot.
Ruff chuckled.
I never seen that done afore by a mole.
The water meadow was extremely hard to negotiate. They were constantly shaking thick, bunched weed and long water lily stems off the paddles. From the far side, the sounds of urgent shouts and creatures thrashing about in the rushes echoed over the water.
Get ahead of the rascal! Cut him off, Riggo! I got him! No, I ain't! The little scallywag's away again! Kangle, Furb, there he goes! Stop the scamp!
This was followed by a sharp screech and a splash.
Ow, ow, the blighter spiked me! He's fallen in, chief! Furrin snouts, look out! Here comes a pike, a big un!
The pointed log prow broke through a reed bank, and the four travelers took in the scene at a glance. Several shrews were dancing in agitation, pointing wildly at the water. A tiny hedgehog was going down for the second time, splashing and gurgling. He was in deadly danger. Gliding smoothly toward the hog babe was a pike, its rows of needle-like teeth exposed as its jaws opened in anticipation, the dorsal fin near its tail sticking out of the water, dragging weeds along. Dottie yelled out in dismay,
By the left! Look at the size of that brute! He'll crunch the little tyke in one bite, spikes and all!
The shrews threw up their paws hopelessly.
He's a dead 'un, all right. Not we can do now, mates.
Girth tried to reach out with his paddle to the hog babe, but he was too far away for it to do any good.
Brr, ye poor lickle ham and all.
Then Ruff dashed the length of the log to gain momentum and leapt high, soaring over Girth and Dottie in a spectacular dive, roaring while he sailed through the air.
You great slab-sided worm gargler, come to me!
Vegetation and spray flew everywhere as the big otter hit the water purposely to divert the pike from its prey. Instead of swimming for the babe, Ruff went like lightning at the fish. He shot by the pike like an arrow, swirled and brought his powerful tail crashing against its flat, vicious head. Rearing up out of the water, he threw himself on the predator. They both went down. Brocktree, Dottie, and Girth paddled furiously, taking the log in between the pike and the hog babe. Girth hooked the tiny creature's little belt with a digging claw and fished him on board. The shrews were jumping up and down with excitement, yelling encouragement to Ruff.
Yee-haw! Hold him, big feller! You got the river wolf!
Flashes of otter fur and green-gold scales revolved furiously in the clouded water. Then the two broke the surface. Ruff had his paws clamped like a vice about the pike's mouth, holding it tight shut, while harsh, wet slaps rang out as the mighty predator battered its tail, fins, and body against its captor, struggling to break free and attack him. Ruff used his tail rudder like a club, striking the pike's head madly. Whack! Smack! Splat! Thwack! Bang! The pike fell back under Ruff's assault, eyes glazing over, speckled body going limp. Releasing it, the otter practically flew through the water and surged onto the log, blowing water.
Ooh! That'll put paid to his gallop for a while, Dotty, though he'll wake up with a headache like no beast's business. 'Tweren't easy, though. You ever tried stunning a full-grown pike with your tail?
Dotty peered behind at her small, round scut.
Afraid I haven't, old chap. A hare's tail's not exactly built for biffin' pike with, what?
The pike must have had a thick skull. Partially recovered, it displayed its savage nature by charging the log. Brocktree thumped it, none too gently, on its snout with his paddle.
Gertcha! Away with you, or I'll really put something on your mind. Be off, sir!
With an angry swish of its tail, the fish ripped off into the depths, its voracious appetite unsated. Dropping her paddle for a moment, Dotty rummaged through one of the packs until she found a piece of material which she used as a towel. She handed it to the hog babe, and he draped it around his tiny body, muttering mutinously to himself.
"Gone and gore all wet now! Confounded shoe! Pushing me in a water! Skickles didn't want a bath!"
Girth nudged Dotty as they watched the infant hedgehog.
"Yer, miz, be ye little bloke all right?"
The hair maid could not resist smiling at the disgruntled babe.
"Yer, he'm fur-rattled, but he'll live, I expect, Girth."
No sooner did they touch the shore than Ruff was surrounded by shrews clapping him on the back.
"You're a rough old beast, matey. You beat the river wolf. You showed him. Aye, he was champion of these waters till you came along. Let me shake your paw, warrior. I'm Log-a-Log Gren."
Ruff shook heartily with the shrew chieftain.
"Pleased to meet you, Gren. Couldn't let the little un get eight, so I had to tail-wop old River Wolf." "Ho-ho! And a fine job you did of it, mate. Come and take lunch with us. Beach that log and bring your friends."
The shrew camp was little more than blankets stretched over branches to form makeshift tents. Introductions were made all around, and Gren called for food. Brocktree watched in amusement as the shrews argued and fought over who was going to serve Ruff. They squared off at one another, scruffy fur standing up aggressively, pawing their small rapiers and adjusting their multicolored headbands to jaunty angles.
"Boy, back off there, fiddle paws! I'm serving Mr. Ruff."
"Talk to me like that, twingy nose, and I'll serve you your teeth on a plate. I'm waiting on Mr. Ruff."
Dotty helped herself to hot shrew bread and a bowl of steaming vegetable stew.
"Touchy lot you've got here, Gren Marm. Are they always like this?"
Log-a-Log Gren calmly shrugged off an arguing shrew who had stumbled against her.
"Always. Long as any beast can remember. We shrews can't help being what we are, born to argue. I want to thank you and your pals for rescuing Skickles. We found the little tyke wandering round a while back. What a pawful that babe is! I never knew any beast with such a mind of an his own. Ain't that right, Skickles?"
The babe in question waved a severe paw under Gren's nose.
"Me name's Skickles, not Skickles."
Dotty attempted to help out by translating, using her talent for accents and dialects.
"Oh, I see. Your name's Skittles?"
The hog babe scowled darkly, huddling deeper into the towel.
"Tcha! Stupid rabbit! Me name's not Skibbles, it's Skickles!"
Dotty tried another alternative.
"You say your name's Skittles?"
He smiled patronizingly at her, as if the message had finally got over.
"That's right! Skickles!"
"His name's Skittles," Dotty explained a grin, "but he's a bit young to pronounce it properly, so he calls himself Skickles."
Gren placed a bowl of stew in front of Skittles, who promptly buried his snout in it.
"There's one or two things I could call him, and they wouldn't be Skittles. That 'un's a right little terror."
Skittles poked his stew-covered nose over the bowl at her.
"Me name not just Skickles, you know. I called Skickleby Spike Diggle. That's me real long name."
Dottie broke shrew bread and dipped it in her stew.
"What does the B stand for?"
Skittles eyed her ferociously.
"The B's for Bertrump. But I pull you ears very hard if you tells any beast."
Dottie narrowed her eyes and gave Skittles a savage grimace.
"If you ever call me Rabbit again, or even Rabbit, I'll tan your tail bright red. Then I'll announce to every beast that your middle name's Bertrump. So how do you feel about that, Master Skittles, what?"
Skittles decided that the hair maid had him over a barrel and stumped off without another word. Ruff was the center of attention. The shrew females wiggled their snouts at him in a very flattering manner, while the males served him the best of their food, which together with the shrew beer they brewed was voted totally delicious by the friendly otter. Young shrews began showing off their prowess to impress him. They fenced and performed tricks with their rapiers and wrestled, a favorite sport among Logalog Gren's tribe. Dottie and Girth sat watching them. The hair maid was quite impressed.
"I say, well done, chaps. By the left, Girth, these shrews are jolly good wrestlers, what?"
The strong mole nodded politely. "I'm furred middlin', miz, but my dad's moles be knowin' more about wrestlin' than they'ns. Girtly more, O.R." Dottie was intrigued.
"I don't suppose you wrestle, do you?"
Girth twiddled his claws, smiling modestly.
"Bri, Miss Dottie, I be champion wrestler of e moles. I win de girt silver buckle belt at it. Look."
He opened his tunic and showed her the belt he wore beneath. The buckle was of wrought silver, depicting two moles tussling. Girth's name was etched on it in mole script. G.W.R.T.
"Course, I don't like a showing it often to every beast."
Dottie nudged her mole friend.
"You sly old tunnel dog. How about giving me a small demonstration? Go on, please. Test your skill on those shrews."
Fastening up his tunic, Girth shrugged and flexed his muscles.
"I vows I won't hurt 'em, miz."
Standing in the midst of the wrestling shrews, Girth called out his challenge in a deep bass voice.
"I be e child a long ladle, born down e darkest deep tunnel. I'm faster in lightning, harder in e rocks, and stronger in my mum's ale."
Here he bent and scarred a furrow in the ground with his claw.
"Who be's boldin' enough to step o'er e loin and wrestle oi?"
Several of the shrews lined up, rubbing their paws in anticipation. Girth signaled the first one.
"You'm look a mighty beast, sir. Step e oop."
The shrew charged recklessly. Girth sidestepped neatly, cuffing him as he hurtled by. The shrew somersaulted once and landed flat on his back, completely winded.
"Good effort, sir. I'll take two of thee next."
Two more impetuous shrews flung themselves at him. Girth did no more than grab their tails, twist, and send them crashing head-on into one another. He bowed.
"Thank ye, gentle beasts. Anyone else try them luck?"
A much bigger, older shrew crossed the line and went into an expert wrestler's crouch, holding his paws ready to grip. Smiling broadly at him, Girth accepted the grip.
"Yow! Wow! Wow! Let go! You're breaking me paws!"
Girth turned to Dottie, still holding his opponent.
"I told thee, Miss Dot, they'm good, but not gooder in oi."
He released the shrew and ambled back to his seat. However, another shrew, bolder than his compatriots, leapt on Girth's back and locked all four paws around the mole's neck in a submission stranglehold. Girth reached behind, tweaked the shrew's tail experimentally, then gave it a sharp tug to the right,
his opponent fell to the floor, frozen in the same position as when he landed on Girth's back. Smiling and shaking his head, the champion wrestling mole sat down beside Dottie.
Her, her, her. Eem were a cunnin' hammin', ol' miz, but goin' agin he rules. I'll let him lay there a while. Mayap 'twill teach him a manner or two.
Dottie gazed adoringly at her mole friend.
I say, you were magnificent. Would you teach me to wrestle like that, Girth, please?
Brr, aye. How could I refuse such an handsome creature as he, marm? Us'll start a trainin' this very evenin'.
Dottie winked at Lord Broxtree.
See? The old fatal beauty always does the trick, sir.
They lingered at the Shrew camp until late evening and finally accepted Gren's invitation to stay overnight. Even then, Ruff and Girth had become such firm favorites that the Shrews pleaded with them to extend their visit. Dottie liked being with the Shrews. She enjoyed their company, and being garrulous and talkative herself, she joined in all the arguments with gusto. Lord Broxtree took quite a bit of convincing that he should take a few days off from his quest, but under the combined persuasive powers of his three friends, he yielded gruffly. The Badger Lord would not admit it, but he had become very fond of the hog babe Skittles, and was loath to part from the little fellow. He hid his feelings by pretending that Skittles was an unwanted pest. They wandered the camp together, the tiny hedgehog seated astride the badger's sword hilt, up on his friend's huge shoulders, carrying on lively conversations.
"Get down from there, you wretch! It's like having a big boulder perched on my back, you great lump! You make Skittles get down, I chop your head off with this sword, Bok!"
"Oh, well, I suppose you better stay up there. Keep to the hilt, though. Don't go near that blade, you nuisance."
"Come on, Bok, gee up. We go looking for berries."
"Great seasons of famine. Will some beast rid me of this pestilence?" "What sort of berries do you want, eh?"
"Nice, sweetie ones. That's what Skickles like."
Ruff sat with Log-a-Log Gren, sampling shrew beer and chuckling at the antics of Skittles and Broxtree.
"Will you look at him, marm? Big softy. That little hog is Brock twirled about his paw. Ahoy there, Dottie. Have you wrestled that mole to a standstill yet?"
The hair maid neatly tripped her instructor so that he fell sitting next to Ruff. Girth smiled approvingly.
"No, sir. Miss Dot bain't wind oi yet, but her soon will. She'm a girt clever wrestler. Learns quicker than any beast oi ever instructed, brrrye."
Dottie sat with them, accepting a beaker of dandelion and burdock cordial from Gren.
"Huh! Don't listen to that fat fibber. I'm sore as a peeled onion all over from being blinkin' well thrown by him. Still, I am learning one or two jolly good wrestling wheezes. Break falls, holes, blocks, and whatnot, what?"
Gren poured cordial for Girth.
"Mayhap you'll need 'em if you're bound to follow Lord Brock to the mountain by the seas. From what he tells me, his dreams are worried. He sees visions of great trouble there."
Dottie sipped her delicious drink, which had been cooling in the stream for a night and a day.
"Well, he could be right, marm. Badger lords ain't like the rest of us. They're fated beasts who see strange things."
The shrew chieftain was gnawing her lip, staring off into space when Ruff nudged her.
"Go on, Gren, say it. You wants to come with us, don't you?"
She stood up and stretched before answering.
"Gwasom shrews need something to do. Look at 'em, cooking, wrestling, arguing. Ah, we've been too long in one place now. Nothing better for shrews than having something to do. Keeps them up to the line. Aye, Ruff, if and ye'll have us, the Gwasom are with you all the way."
All four clasped paws. Gren was highly pleased now that she had made her decision. Girth twiddled his digging claws politely, asking a question which was puzzling him.
"Why do ye be called Gwasoms, marm? Forgive my higgerance."
Gran explained proudly about the shrew tradition.
Gwasom! Gorilla Union of Shrews in Mossflower. That's what the letters of our name stand for. I'm called Logalog, because all shrew chieftains are. We're rovers, bold water beasts, and fierce warriors, sworn to uphold good and defeat evil. All Gwasom shrews are bound under oath to help one another in battle.
Girth winked.
Pretty useful to have along, I'd say, Marm.
Lord Brocktree returned, both paws full of small hard pears, which he spread on the ground before lifting Skittles down to earth. The badger sighed.
Couldn't find any berries, but the pestilence here came across these wild pears, sweet but hard as stones. He wouldn't rest until we'd picked some, dreadful rogue.
Skittles seated himself on the badger's footpaw.
Well, shoes be good cookers. They do something with him.
Gren picked up a pear and tasted it.
He's right. We've got lots of sweet chestnuts from last autumn. Once these ear pears are stewed down, the cooks can make some lovely pear and chestnut flans.
The hog babe looked up and winked with both eyes.
See, Buck, I told you, make nice flangs. Glenn, Sickleby's hungry. I never have a flang. Must be nice.
Dottie took the hog babe's paw.
Come on, then, famine face. Gather em up and we'll go and lend a paw with the shrew cooks.
When Brocktree heard the news that the Gwasom were joining them, he was overjoyed, though he changed his plans on the spot.
Right. No more lying around here. I vote that we break camp in the morning and get underway.
Ruff objected.
Ahoy there, Brock. Hold your paddles, matey. There's me, Girth, Dottie, Grin, and about 100 shrews. If and we wants to lie round for a day or two, then you'll find you're probably outvoted.
Lord Brocktree's eyes told the otter that he was not about to have his decision overruled. Swinging forth his battle blade, he stuck it quivering into the ground.
Let's be reasonable about this, friend.
Let me explain the rules. One badger lord carries 200 votes, and his sword carries another 100. Agreed? Ruff looked from the sword to the badger. Sunlight gleamed from the blade, lighting Brocktree's eyes with a formidable gleam. He smiled nervously at his huge friend.
Reason. That's what I likes, mate. Vote carried. We go after breakfast tomorrow.
Book 2. At the Court of King Bucko, also entitled The Tribulations of a Hair Maid. 15. Fleet Scut's wild yells wakened the squirrels. Juka rubbed irately at her eyes as she approached the dancing hare, Ruro hurrying to join her. Juka loaded a stone into her sling.
He thinks the time has come to silence that long-eared windbag.
Ruro placed a restraining paw on her leader's shoulder.
Mayhap he is more to be pitied than punished, Juka. I think his mind is snapped, crazed from the hunger. Fleet Scut, wouldst thou not like to lie down and rest, old friend? I'll pick some roots for thee to nibble upon, eh?
But the old hare continued to prance about and shout,
"Nibble roots? You think I've gone off me bally rocker? Look, there 'tis, plain as thou washin' on me granny's line!"
Ruro stared out into the dawn light. Ahead, to the northeast, lay forest lands.
"Oh, I see, 'tis the trees. Well, that be a welcome sight."
Fleet Scut bounced up and down with impatience.
"Not the trees, you benighted bush-tailed buffoon! The sign, as it says in the confounded poem. March on through two moons and suns. My sign you'll see, I think. Well, there 'tis, the sign. Your young eyes are better than mine. You should be able to distinguish it. Huh, I'm nearly blind from the starvation. Blinkin' unvittled eye shrink, I think they call it. But I can see the sign."
Juka interrupted Fleet Scut's wild tirade.
"Then cease acting like a drunken toad and point it out."
The old hare calmed somewhat at the sight of the loaded sling.
"Right. Pay attention there.
Follow the line of me paw, what? Now, do you see those two tall silver firs yonder, eh? Notice anything about them, what? They've had most of the lower boughs chopped away, and a thin dead trunk placed high on two notches atween them.
Juka nodded.
Aye, 'tis true, I see them.
Fleetscut smote his forehead with a paw.
Thank me, Grandpa's whiskers, for that! So, Marm, does that crosspiece not look to you as if it's been purposely placed there? Use your noggin, squirrel. That's a letter H. It stands for hair. H is for blinkin', flippin', bloomin' hair. You catch my drift at last, what?
Juka commented dryly. Well done, hair. Thou canst spell the name of thine own species. Ruro, break camp. We'll make for yonder sign straight away. Fleetscut followed them, muttering,
Good job the chap wasn't a squirrel. How in the name of fur would he bend trees into an S-shape, eh? Stiffen me, but I think the old Tums finally glued itself to me backbone. Hope I make it there before I perish and shrivel up, what?
Fortunately, the old hare did not perish, nor shrivel up, and they marched into the tree shade by mid-morn. Grood stared up at the giant H-sign.
Kuroka! How did any beast get that splittin', flittin', gurgle-twip up so high?
Juka cuffed his ears soundly.
Language, Grood!
Fleetscut found some young dandelions and devoured them. He came across some wild ramsons, tasting strongly of garlic. He devoured them, too, and continued his foraging, stumbling over the footpaws of squirrels resting in the tree shade.
I say, you chaps, move your carcasses! Stopping a poor beast getting at nature's bounty! Bounders!
They averted their faces from his breath, disgusted.
Phew! Get thee gone, long ears! Thou smellest like a midsummer midden at high noon! Ugh!
Fleetscut discovered some basil thyme and stuffed it down.
Confounded sissies! Try sniffing yourselves after a couple of days marching without a wash betwixt ye! What a pong! Hello! Here's luck! A couple of lamb's lettuce! Yummy!
He ate them, flowers and all, plus some harebells, sweet violets, chicory, and butterwort. End of Side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.